Goats are one of the oldest domesticated animals and played a key role in the Neolithic agricultural revolution. They are social, adaptable, reproduce quickly, and along with sheep, were prized for their meat, milk, and coats. In late 1946 or early 1947, Bedouin teenagers were tending their goats and sheep near the ancient settlement of Qumran, located on the northwest shore of the Dead Sea in what is now known as the West Bank. One of the young shepherds tossed a rock into an opening on the side of a cliff and was surprised to hear a shattering sound. He and his companions later entered the cave and found a collection of large clay jars, seven of which contained leather and papyrus scrolls. An antiques dealer bought the cache, which ultimately ended up in the hands of various scholars who established that the texts were upwards of 2,000 years old. After word of the discovery got out, Bedouin treasure hunters and archaeologists unearthed tens of thousands of additional scroll fragments from 10 nearby caves. Together, they make up between 800 and 900 manuscripts, some of which went on display recently at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. So I decided to pay a visit for myself to get a first-hand look, and I'm bringing you along with me. So let's go. The Dead Sea Scrolls are considered by many to be among the greatest discoveries in modern archaeology. Discovered in the Qumran caves near the Dead Sea, the scrolls contain not only the earliest known copies of the Holy Scripture, but also ancient writings that can change not only the way we think about the Bible, but the life and culture of first century Palestine and Israel. But who wrote them? The origin of the Dead Sea Scrolls, which were written between the 3rd century BC to the 2nd century AD, remains a subject of scholarly debate to this day. According to conventional theory, they're the work of a Jewish population that inhabited Qumran until Roman troops destroyed the settlement around 70 AD. These Jews are thought to have belonged to a devout, ascetic, and communal sect called the Essenes, one of four distinct Jewish groups living in Judea before and during the Roman era. Ascetic refers to a practice of self-denial and abstinence from physical desires and other worldly pleasures, commonly associated with Aryan religions such as Buddhism and Hinduism, but this also includes certain sects of Judaism, as there were several and they were often at times politically, ideologically, and spiritually opposed to each other. That said, the Star of David, which appears on the flag of modern Israel and is currently one of the most recognizable symbols associated with Judaism, was in fact also used extensively by Islam, even previously featured on the national flag of Morocco, referred to as the Seal of Solomon, a term also used in conjunction with the current pentagram. Both symbols, along with the swastika, stem from ancient Aryans, and there are many examples of the star and swastika appearing together by Aryan cultures in ancient India, Tibet, and Phoenicia. The prior symbol traditionally associated with Judaism is the seven candlesticks, which was replaced by the star with the prominence of Kabbalah in Europe, as well as the growth of Zionism and messianic expectations, which incidentally also have their roots in Aryan Zoroastrianism, which likely was adopted and disseminated after the Jewish captivity and the fall of Babylon. In the Zoroastrian religion of ancient Iran, and in earlier mystery religions of the ancient Chaldean Magi of Mesopotamia, The messianic figure is known as Shoshant, which means savior. According to legend, this final savior of the world will be born to a virgin impregnated by the seed of Zoroaster while bathing in a lake, which has been kept intact for thousands of years by angels. Zoroastrian texts talk about her sacred lineage and how she is descended of a certain Aryan bloodline. This is important for Zoroastrians because they believe that the Shoshant will be a descendant of Zarathustra, the original prophet of Zoroastrianism. The texts reveal that he will destroy all evil in the world and usher in the future utopia, or paradise on earth. When he is 30 years old, there will be a cosmic sign in the sky announcing his identity, and then when he is 57 years old, he will vanquish all evil from the world, and humanity will be released from temptation, making the world perfect and ushering in immortality. Many scholars have often pointed to the similarities between the idea of Shoshant and that of the Moshiach, or Messiah, in Judaism, which strongly influenced the beliefs surrounding Jesus in Christianity. Furthermore, the idea of the final battle between Shoshant and the forces of evil have been compared to the final battle between the Messiah Jesus and the Antichrist from both Christianity and Islam. Many of these concepts made their way into European alchemy and mystery schools via the Knights Templar, who were Kabbalists and were greatly influenced by Islamic mysticism, which in turn retained guarded esoteric knowledge from the ancient Aryan Magi of Mesopotamia. Established in 1118, the Templars were a Christian military order that played the prominent role in the Crusades. The order was originally known as the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ and the Temple of Solomon, but became known as the Knights Templar after establishing their headquarters inside of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is located on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem in 1119. They were also involved in colonizing parts of the surrounding regions, building castles and strongholds, and establishing a form of early banking. The Templar Knights, in their distinctive white mantles with a red cross, revered and used the Seal of Solomon symbol, which reflected their esoteric Gnostic beliefs that included sacred sexual practices of internal alchemy, as the six-pointed hexagram, or shatkona as it is called in Hinduism, portrays the union of the masculine and feminine, and the vital energy, also known as chi, prana, or vril, that can be harnessed and transmuted through semen retention and tantric union. The Knights Templar and the Holy Grail are a central part of medieval history, which mainstream historians consider an allegory for the quest of salvation. But occult secret societies such as the Rosicrucians and Freemasons, both of whom share Kabbalistic affinities with the Templars, also share the belief that the Grail is also a reference to bloodlines that entered Europe from the Middle East, both from the Davidic line, of which Mary, the mother of Jesus, was allegedly part of, and an Odinic bloodline, which contends that the Norse god Odin was based on a flesh and blood king who migrated north, according to Icelandic sagas, and eventually founded the Swedish and Danish royal dynasties before being deified in Germanic lore.
And in fact, the people who planned and executed the conquest of England were actually five cousins. I then thought, well, that's interesting. Where did they come from? And they actually come from a marriage with a guy called Adolf, who at that time was king or leader of the Visigoths, who claimed descent from Odin, and Maria of the Archesites, who claimed descent from Jesus via his daughter Maria.
And at that time it didn't really bother anybody that somebody was claiming descent from Jesus?
No, why should it? I mean, you know, so what? I mean, the point about it is that, you know, she was claiming descent from the Davidic line. In other words, a ruling group who at that stage in in history was becoming very important. I mean, after all, Charlemagne, you know, used to call himself Filius Davidi, the son of David. You know, this was a, it was this royal claim. Okay, so, you know, the church proclaimed Jesus divine, but that wasn't the point, really. I mean, as far as I was concerned, it was simply that Jesus was descended, according to the various genealogies that exist within the Bible, from David. Okay. And according to the various genealogies which exist in Norse mythology and Mercian mythology, etc., then Ataulf was descended from Odin. But incidentally, Ataulf was not called Ataulf probably during his lifetime. He was called originally Ufa or Ulf. Atta simply means father of or the ancestor. Just like Ataturk, his name's something of a camel. A Mustafa camel.
Yes.
Right? And but it's called Ataturk, the father of the Turks. So it's a title which was given to him. So just as Ulf became the father of his dynasty, so he was called Ataulf. And this is why I call the dynasty that's descended from him Ulvunga, you see, the folk of Ulf.
Hugh Montgomery is the author of The God Kings of Europe, The Descendants of Jesus Traced Through the Odinic and Davidic Dynasties. Professor Montgomery explains that many royal families around the globe know that they are descended from the Davidic line that Jesus was said to belong to. And while this incredible story has been allegedly withheld from the public for centuries, it is well known to secret societies, Kabbalists, and Gnostic organizations such as the Knights Templar, Rosicrucians, and Freemasons. He talks about the Norse and Germanic dynasty being traced back to a bloodline associated with Odin, the Babylonian roots of the line of European and Nordic kings, and the conquest and migration of these dynasties to the rest of Europe, including the bloodline of Jesus Christ himself. While similar claims were made by ethnographer Thor Heyerdahl, who also conducted archaeological research into allegations documented in Icelandic sagas, which state that the Swedish and Danish royal dynasties were descended from Odin after migrating north from around the Black Sea, what is the scientific evidence to support the belief that such a migration ever took place?
In 1157 BC, the Kassite dynasty of Babylon was replaced by the second Isin dynasty. The Kassite dynasty had ruled Babylon for some 500 years. It was ended by the hand of Marduk. Now, Marduk was the god of Babylon, if you like, and he was a subsidiary to An or Enlil, but he at this point was the god of Babylon, or the god of a particular city, in point of fact. Now, the whole point about Babylonian religious system at this point was that the god was responsible for everything. If you were in the favor of the god, you could remain as king, and you would have children. God gave you the children. If you won a battle, you won a battle because God was with you. If you lost a battle, it's because God had withdrawn his favor. But he was also responsible for your well-being. So, if there was disease, then he had withdrawn his favor. And the hand of Marduk was a hemorrhagic plague. A hemorrhagic plague is basically where it is, first of all, carried from person to person, and you get boils, you get emissions of blood, etc. That is a hemorrhagic plague, and it goes from person to person. It soon happens that this has become very interesting recently, because they have discovered that the Black Death was in fact not a bubonic plague. It was a hemorrhagic plague.
And this has been brought out in a number of academic reviews, and this is why. The people had to leave Babylon because God was no longer with them. But some people built up an immunity to this hemorrhagic plague. This mutation, because that's what it is known as CCR5 Delta 32. Why is it so important now? Why have we suddenly become interested in this? Because guess what? It gives you immunity to HIV-1.
This study, published in 2005, proposes that the Black Death was indeed a viral hemorrhagic disease, and that CCR5 Delta 32 mutation is present in 10% of the people of European descent today, providing resistance to HIV-1 and some other viral infections, and likely originated from a mutation in 1000 BC. That said, it is primarily found in Northern Europeans and Western Asia, but has since spread to other parts of the world. The selective pressures that led to the fixation of the CCR5 Delta 32 variant in the European genome are not clear, but Northern Europeans are also among the most lactose-tolerant demographics in the world, meaning they can digest milk as adults, and the genetic mutation leading to lactose tolerance is believed to have first appeared in the Middle East around the time humans began domesticating animals like cows, goats, and sheep, which would have allowed them to drink milk regularly. This mutation, along with the phenotype for blue eyes and blonde hair, is thought to have entered Europe and Scandinavia via Turkey, where Troy was located and Odin allegedly migrated into Europe from, starting in Turkey, moving to Saxland or Germany, Denmark, and eventually Sweden, where he allegedly settled for good.
So, they left Mesopotamia, and they moved north. They possibly founded Troy. I say possibly, because we can't prove it. But we shall be able to show that they were certainly in Troy. There they moved up through Bithynia, past the Black Sea, and either this side of the Danube or that side of the Danube. Again, we do not know exactly. We know that they got to this point, and we know that they moved up to here. And we know that they finished up here in Östra and Västra Gotland and this little island of Gotland, and then over here to Iceland. We can trace their migration from four sources. The Icelandic saga Hindludio says, Beora gumna gopam signapi. It means Sumerian. There's a translation. Those Sumerians were blessed by the gods. Why? Because they were immune to the plague. They were very blessed. We can show it further. The Newton Stone, where they settled for a while. That's now in the Aberdeen University. They were known at this point as the Kassai. From the Kassite dynasty, they were called the Kassai. And the greatest number of CCR5 Delta 32 mutations has shown up in Scandinavia, southern Scandinavia, and particularly Iceland. So we can trace their migration by this mutation and where it occurs, because there's hardly any of it in southern Europe. And the Vikings seeded this mutation throughout Normandy and England. As they raked their way across Europe, the offspring of these rapes became immune as well. In Scandinavia, they became known as the Goths. Goth is the plural of Gota in Hundanic, which is the Danish language of the Orkneys, and it literally means gods. They'd been god kings of Babylon, They brought all this wonderful technology, all this science with them. They had wheeled chariots. They had lots of things. So obviously, they were gods to the local inhabitants. From Scandinavia, they moved south and split into two groups, the Visigoths and the Ostrogoths. We are concerned here, for the time being, only with the Visigoths, and with the first of their kings for whom we have a name. He's known as Rus the Veulgjot. I'm putting these up because names get changed through different languages. In the Sumerian or Babylonia, Odin is called Idina. In Old Mesopotamian and Trojan, he is called Yuan. In Gothic, Veul. In Old Norse, Nodin. In Anglo-Saxon, Woden. And in Mercia, Wotan. These were the names of the last two Kassite kings, Marduk Aple Idina and Zababa Shuma Idina. So these were the first two Odins that we can identify. Rus, the Veulgjot, can be analysed as follows. Rus means Trojan. It shows that he is saying, I was in Troy, or my ancestors were in Troy. And Veulgjot simply means the Woden Goth or the Woden God. So here we have, through the names, the proof of who they considered themselves to be descended from. Now we're going to look at another genealogy, a genealogy known as the House of Bethany. And in it, you have a guy called Yeshua ben Yosef, or Jesus, who is married to Maria. Now, not at this point, please, Maria Magdalene. Maria of Bethany. Okay?
Mary of Bethany is a biblical figure mentioned by name in the Gospel of John. Quote, Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. In Orthodox Church tradition and some Protestant traditions, Mary of Bethany is honored as a separate individual from Mary Magdalene.
This is a list of some of the non-canonical books of the New Testament, the Apocrypha. There's an awful lot of them. There's more actually there than there is in the New Testament. Amongst them, he wrote the secret Gospel of Mark, the Gospel of the Egyptians, the Gospel of the Hebrews, the secret book of James. I reckon that some of the documents which might have been found either in Edessa or perhaps later in Jerusalem was A, the Gospel of Philip, and B, the book of Alcisai. There you are, a copy of the Gospel of Philip. This is the Sahidic Coptic on this side, and this is the English translation. There were three who always walked with the Lord: Mary his mother, the sister of his mother, and Miriam of Magdala, known as his companion. In brackets, the translators put this in, koinonos.
Sorry?
Koinonos. For him, Miriam is a sister, a mother, and a wife. Koinonos. Let's have a look at that. Koinonos is Sahidic Coptic, but comes from the Greek. It means to have sex with, to copulate with, to mate with. It means a sexual companion. There is no possibility that it means anything else. It comes from the Greek verb koinonum. Now, you say, well, okay, it was Sahidic Coptic. Well, Sahidic Coptic is about 250 AD. Yes, true, but there are Greek fragments which have been dated to 75 AD. Older than any of the canonical gospels.
Now, I don't know if everyone knows about the Gospel of Philip, but it's part of the Nag Hammadi group of things. There are Greek fragments of it, which have been dated to between 87 and 100 AD.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So they are older than any of the canonical Gospels. And normally, under normal historical conditions, you would say if something is nearer to an event, it has more validity than something that's further away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So why should we change it just because we're talking about Jesus?
It's not been through anybody else's hands.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Absolutely none. Well, as we know, because Eusebius said so, that he rewrote the Gospels after 325 AD.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so, what does it say here? It says, there were three who always walked with the Lord. Mary his mother, the sister of his mother, and Miriam of Magdala, known as his companion, in brackets, koinonis. And then it goes on, says, for him, Miriam is a sister, a mother, and a wife. Again, the word koinonis.
Mm.
Now, let's be quite clear. Koinonis comes from the Greek verb koinon, meaning to copulate with or to mate with.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The Cathars descend from the Elchisites. In fact, the word Cathar comes from the word katharoi, which was used to describe the Elchisites. And the Cathars had a book which stated quite bluntly that Jesus was not only married, but had two wives, one of whom was Mary Magdalene. Now, let's just go back a moment. Here, it states quite clearly, Miriam Magdala is known as his companion. Yes, she's called Koinonis, but she is not referred to as the wife. Someone else is referred to as the wife. Not the same person. Who's the other one? Mary of Bethany. Now, one of the big problems that we have is that Pope Gregory, in his homily number 132, maintained that Mary of Bethany and Mary of Magdalene were the same people. And in 1967, the Roman Catholic Church had to reverse that opinion because it was wrong, because all the scholars knew it was wrong. They are two totally different people. The problem for the Church, and this is what they tried desperately to cover up, that Jesus was married to both of them. So, and the Cathars specifically have a book which says that Jesus was married twice, at one and the same time. But then, so was his father Joseph. Joseph was married to Mary, sometimes called the Virgin, and also to a woman called Hannah, or Channa, or Anna. We're getting this Anna in again. And Jesus had not only brothers, four brothers, but also half-brothers and sisters.
So we're saying that a descendant of Jesus in Maria was married off to
a pope,
the
Visigoths.
Who the Visigoths came indirectly from?
Odin.
Odin.
Yeah.
Who was?
Well,
originally.
Okay. Odin originally was, first of all, the name Odin you get in not just one of them, there are a number of Odins, people called Odin.
So first of all,
it's effectively a title. It's rather like Pharaoh. It's God's personage on earth. Okay?
Same thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the first of those was kings of the Kassite dynasty. Kassite dynasty of Babylon ruled between 1600 BC, roughly, to roughly 1150 BC. And the first of the known people called Odin was actually these two, Marduk Apla Idina, or Odin, and Zababa Shuma Idina. From there, they moved from Babylon, and they moved from here, Mesopotamia, up past the Black Sea. But they stopped, first of all, in Troy.
Mm.
Now, whether or not they actually founded Troy, I don't know, but it's a possibility. Certainly, one of their descendants called himself a Trojan. So there is the probability that they actually were the founders of Troy. So from Troy, they went up part of the Black Sea and either went this way along the Danube or that way. Now, we don't know which. But we know that they got to this point because there is a little stone which they put up to note the fact that they had stayed there, and which is now in the Aberdeen Museum.
Oh, right.
Okay.
So archaeological
evidence that they got there. Right. And if they got started from here, that must have been one or other of their routes. We don't know the exact routes, and we can't prove it. Okay? And we then know that they got across here to Gotland, and there are two further Gotlands in Sweden, Ostrogotland and Västergotland. Why Gotland? Well, I suspect that they were called gods by the local inhabitants, because they would have come to a region which was pretty primitive, and they would have brought with them an enormous amount of what to them would be new technology. Mm. Chariots, horses, chariot wheels, the ability to use ships, all sorts of things. Mm. Perhaps bronze working that they'd never seen before. Mm. So they would have been called gods, or goths.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm. And so this was named after them. These were the godlands. After, again, a few hundred, perhaps even a thousand years. Mm. Moved down into main Europe as the Goths, where they split and became the Ostrogoths and the Visigoths.
Yeah.
And that is the point where we really start the genealogy of the God Kings. The Icelandic epic, Hindludjur, okay, there is a passage in it which translates as, "But Radvar was Razva's son, whose Gumma were blessed by the gods." Now the Gumma are actually the Sumerians. So this is saying the Sumerians were blessed by the gods.
Mm.
Why? Because the hemorrhagic plague arrived, and guess who was immune to it?
Mm.
The Sumerians.
Incredible.
So here we have an Icelandic epic which actually shows what we can prove by scientific methods.
Mm.
When they finish up in Sweden and Gotland and so on, they became known as the Goths, because they were so much in advance of the inhabitants there. And I suspect that therefore the inhabitants considered Odin to have been a god, but of course he had a representative on Earth.
Mm-hmm. You know, cutting to the chase, we've actually got a family, a bloodline that left Sumeria a long time ago.
Yep, 1150 BC.
Perfect. End up as Vikings.
End up as Vikings. Yes.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
Who had married into the bloodline of Jesus,
yep.
The Davidic bloodline.
Yep.
With the power and might of the Vikings.
Yep.
As a warrior race.
Absolutely.
In many respects, they would terrify Europe.
Yeah.
And even further.
Yeah.
You know, they went quite a long way. It's not Constantinople itself.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So they were powerful. They'd also joined up with the Celtic Church in some areas.
Yes.
Who we know.
That was slightly later.
Slightly later.
Yeah.
We do know. We now have an inkling as to why they might have joined up with the Celtic Church.
Why not? Because it was to oppose Rome.
Yeah.
And let's face it. I mean, at their apogee, the Orvungas ruled not only half of Scandinavia, but Russia, Normandy, large chunks of France, England, Scotland, southern Italy, Sicily, North Africa, Cyprus, and the whole of Palestine.
They became an extremely powerful family.
The most, in fact, they even managed to get their own man in as Pope. Calixtus II was an Orvunga through and through.
Do you know anybody that knows that they are members of this division?
Oh, yes.
Other than yourself?
Oh, yes. Oh, large numbers.
Really?
Oh, yes.
And they know that they are members.
Oh, yes.
The bloodline of Jesus.
Oh, yes. Well, they always have done. I mean, some of these documents have been held by these families for generations.
Families?
Yes.
In existence now?
Yes.
Know that they are members. They
oh, sure
are. Yeah. Bloodline descendants of Jesus.
Yes, of course. The Da Vinci Code is based upon the Holy Blood, Holy Grail.
No.
Okay? But let's be quite clear about it. It is plagiarism from Michael Bajant. Mm-hmm. Michael Bajant is a friend of mine. Michael Bajant based part of what he wrote, because he only saw some of them afterwards, on documents that I've showed you. He actually has seen at least one of those documents. And he actually says so in, I think it's the something in Templars, about Templar and the Lodge or something. Mm. And he actually says he's been shown a group of documents.
And they were your documents.
And they were mine.
That we've just seen.
That you've just seen. The Washingtons were all Vongos.
Really?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Washingtons and North.
No.
Of course.
This is unbelievable.
No. The fact that it's Jesus as opposed to, I don't know, someone else, is of only minor interest. What is more interesting is not that this guy was... I mean, I don't care whether I'm descended from Jesus or Thomas or Judas or what have you. It doesn't matter. What I'm trying to get at is it's what they represent, which was the Davidic bloodline, which in turn goes back even further. Now, that is what's interesting. And as we, if I then take the Odonic line back, and if those two happen to meet somewhere,
not.
Isn't that fun?
The Grand Ouroboros.
Yeah, isn't it fun?
But it's fascinating.
What to me is important is to try and get the truth out there, right? To try and overcome 2,000 years of church propaganda and actually say, well, can we please have a look at the real evidence? And I'm not suggesting that anyone who is descended from Jesus and at all or what have you is particularly better than us. That isn't the point of it. Nothing to do with it. It is simply a question of what is wrong is that the church has scrambled the minds of people. They have brainwashed them so that they could have power. And in a sense, the whole... If this line is important at all, its only importance is to oppose the power of the church.
The dynasty of Ataulf and Maria became known as the Ulfunga dynasty, which simply means the folk of Ulf. That's all it means, the descendants of Ulf. In some Scandinavian things, it's called the Folkunga dynasty, and the junior branch is known as the Yngling dynasty. And they were the royal families of Denmark and Sweden, respectively. Again, we need to look at names and how they change. Uffa, Offa, Ulf, Wulf, Volf, Folk, Fulk, all have the same origin. They mean wolf or dog. And the Vikings were called the Wolves of the Seas, the sons of Ulf.
In nationalist Germany, the Führer's military headquarters during World War II was called the Wolf's Lair, as the name Adolf means noble wolf, and was prominent in medieval times, given to people who showed leadership and embodied nobility and strength. A rune used by the German SS was the Wolf's Angle, worn by the SS who also revered the Templar Cross. That said, the Germanic runes themselves are believed to have originated from the Phoenician alphabet, meaning the basic design and concept of the runic writing system likely derived from the Phoenician script, although the exact transmission process remains unclear and is a subject of scholarly debate. Of course, there are clear links between Viking and Phoenician ships, the use of serpent symbolism, and both used the swastika symbol extensively. With Phoenician DNA that was sequenced coming back as identical to European DNA, which is understandable as Europe itself is named after Europa, a Phoenician princess from Tyre, the Phoenician capital located in modern Lebanon, just 12 miles away from the border with Israel. It is also interesting to note that the Phoenician alphabet is virtually identical to Old Block Hebrew. The Phoenicians originated in Canaan, and ancient Canaanites descended from an admixture of blonde, blue-eyed people that migrated from the Caucasus region, or modern-day Iran, 6,500 years ago, introducing the Chalcolithic culture, or Copper Age, to the Levant. This, in part, explains Adolf Hitler's affinity and relationship with Persia, which changed its name to Iran in 1935, meaning Land of the Aryans, as Hitler referred to Iranians as pure-blood Aryans, despite that there has been a considerable degree of mixing since the Arab conquest in 635 AD. The Aryan ancestry of Mesopotamian nobility becomes apparent when one examines the many blue-eyed statues from the Sumerian and Babylonian culture, a trait that is also present in depictions of the Aryan Gautama Buddha, who is also described as having blue eyes, and the many blue-eyed statues from ancient Egypt. Incidentally, German textbooks up until 1945 described the oldest waves of the Nordic people during the Holocene originating in Mesopotamia and Egypt prior to Germany or Scandinavia, which explains why the Annenerbe, the German organization that researched ancient cultures, considered Jesus Christ to have come from an Aryan lineage, and the Germanic people to have been the true chosen people mentioned in the Bible. While this statement is considered controversial by modern standards, it is interesting to note that while Jews determine their ancestry from their maternal line, genetic sequencing has determined that at least 80% of Ashkenazi mtDNA, which is inherited from the mother, comes from Italian women indigenous to Europe for at least 7,500 years, and could not have been the Jews of the Bible. After Rome sacked Jerusalem in 70 AD, they took many Jews as slaves, who eventually were freed and took Italian wives that converted to Judaism and migrated north into Europe. So, Ashkenazi Jews, for the most part, do not really carry the ancestral bloodline referenced in the Bible. That said, this study published in Advances in Anthropology concerning ancient Aryan ancestry states, quote, according to Professor Klisoff, the R1A Jews and R1A Arabs are descended from Aryans who swept out of Russia plains about 4,900 years ago, traveling through the Caucasus to Mesopotamia, Abraham's birthplace, and to the Saudi Peninsula. Professor Kliosov notes that the Slavs are also descended from the Aryans. In an anthropological context, the term Aryan or Proto-Indo-European is attributed to the population that first established and diffused agricultural civilization during the Holocene from the Caucasus Mountains region, having first domesticated animals there, such as horses and oxen, used in large-scale farming, which happens to also be where Mount Ararat is located, the place that, according to the Bible, Noah settled after the deluge, or end of the Pleistocene. It is interesting to note how many ancient maps divide the world into three parts, represented by Noah's three sons, all of whom would have been Caucasian, as the Caucasus region is where the term is derived from, becoming the Caucasian Japhites of Europe, the Caucasian Semites of Asia, represented by the Mesopotamian Aryan nobility, and the Caucasian Hamites of Africa, represented by the blonde and red-headed pharaohs of ancient Egypt, the original fair-skinned inhabitants of Ethiopia, as can be seen in this example of an Ethiopian king, the artwork inside of ancient churches in Sudan, the earliest depictions of Mansa Musa in Mali, and the early depictions of the original Moors who had a fair complexion.
Now, these families knew from whom they descended, that they descended from both Odin and the Davidic line of Jesus. We showed you earlier the genealogy of the house of Bethany. This is the original Latin document. The other thing is interesting, Maria, Ruth. The female names are at the beginning of the sentence. Very, very unusual in a patriarchal society. So, what group of people would say it's Maria who generates and Jesus just happens to be the father? It's Maria who generates and Sigismundus just happens to be the father. The answer is the Jews. Because in Judaism, it is through the female that you take your religion. If your father's Jewish and your mother's not Jewish, tough, you're not Jewish. If your father isn't Jewish and your mother's Jewish, you're Jewish.
According to the Chabad website, the code of Jewish law clearly states that a child of a Jewish mother is Jewish, regardless of the father's lineage or whatever else may show up in a DNA test, while the child of a non-Jewish mother is not Jewish.
The two main families involved are both Orvungans. By 1067, the Orvunga dynasty were kings of Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, Grand Dukes of Novgorod, later become Tsars of Russia, Dukes of Normandy, Kings of England, Princes of Capua, and Kings of Sicily. In what? 200 years? Not bad. On the 14th of July, 1099, the crusading army captures Jerusalem. Who led it? Robert, Duke of Normandy, Orvunga. Boemond of Taranto, Hauteville, Orvunga. Raymond of Sanchingles, Orvunga. Godfrey and Baldwin of Boulogne, Orvunga. Raymond of Toulouse, Orvunga. Surprise, surprise. In 1119, Pope Callistus II was elected to the papal throne. Look at that. His great-grandfather had been Richard II, Duke of Normandy. Oh, wow. And guess what? 1119 happens to be the year which the Knights Templars are supposed to be founded. Coincidence? I wonder. It is very doubtful if Constantine himself was ever a Christian. This famous battle where he's supposed to put the sign of the cross up is an equilateral cross which has nothing to do at that point with Christianity. It was the sign of the sun. And he was almost certainly a worshipper of Sol Invictus, the invincible sun.
On the right is an ancient Mesopotamian depiction of a solar cross resembling the cross of the Knights Templar, which can be seen on the left inside of a seal of Solomon, taken from the inside of an Ethiopian church in Lalibela, rumored to have been built by blonde angels, with swastika symbols carved into the stone windows, with the stone structure itself resembling a solar cross. It should come as no surprise that the Knights Templar believed that their ancestry is descended from the temple priests of Jerusalem and initially arrived in the Holy Land on a mission to reclaim secret, esoteric treasure that they believed was rightfully theirs in the form of gold and Kabbalistic text allegedly hidden around Jerusalem, as alluded to in some of the Dead Sea Scrolls, in particular the Copper Scroll, which, unlike the other Dead Sea Scrolls, was etched on metal and contained directions to 64 locations where staggering quantities of treasure could be found. Some scholars have claimed it belonged to the first temple, destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, in 586 BC. Other experts have suggested that the treasure could be that of the second temple, That said, finding the treasure is no easy feat, as the locations are written as if the reader would have an intimate knowledge of the obscure references, which the descendants of the lost tribes that fled into Europe, of which the Templars claim ancestry from, would likely have had. Scholars are unsure if the esoteric treasure was ever found, but according to occult alchemical societies of Europe, that question has already been answered. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through Patreon or various links available in the description section. Please subscribe and leave me your thoughts below as I read all the comments. Stay safe, and I hope to see you again soon.